This is a Suno India production and you're listening to Cyber Democracy. This podcast is in association with Internet Freedom Foundation. Check out their work at internetfreedom.in. The Ministry of Electronics and Information Technology has issued a press release to ban around 59 prominent Chinese mobile applications from both Android and iOS app marketplaces within India under Section 69A of the Information Technology Act. The list includes apps like TikTok, WeChat, CamScanner, Clash of Kings, among others. This is the first time the government has proactively announced the blocking orders, which are often issued in secret with no explanation. The press release states those apps have been engaging in activities which are prejudicial to sovereignty and integrity of India, defense of India, security of state and public order. To decipher this order, I spoke to Pranesh Prakash, an affiliated fellow with Yale Law School Information Society Project. Pranesh is a veteran in the information technology policy space and has documented several issues with the Section 69A of the IT Act. Welcome to Cyber Democracy, Pranesh.
Thanks for having me on.
So, explain to me, how does this blocking of apps or even websites work in India? I mean, you've been tracking internet censorship for a really long time in India. Under what scenarios and under what laws does India block apps and websites?
So essentially, there's only one law that deals with blocking of websites, which is the Information Technology Act. This was originally passed in 2000 and it was amended in 2008. Actually, in 2000, when it was passed originally, it did not have a specific provision on blocking of websites. However, there were websites that were blocked in 2005, 2006, and so on. For instance, those of you who were around the internet at that time might remember something called Savita Babi, which was deemed to be obscene, a cartoon, and the website for that cartoon was blocked in India. However, there was no actual law for blocking it, so it was an order passed by what was the cybersecurity body called CERTIN. Now, in 2008, when the law was amended, a specific provision was added for blocking of internet resources called Section 69A. Apart from that, we have also noticed that under Section 79, which is the provision in the IT Act which deals with intermediary liability, which is the idea of when an intermediary, such as, say, a platform, say like Facebook or Twitter or your internet service provider, when they can be held liable for something that one of their users do. Now, under this provision also, sometimes there have been cases of speech restrictions, including blocking and so on, which have taken place. So yeah, essentially it's this one law called the Information Technology Act and these two provisions.
When you look at the law in particular, right, say Section 69A, it deals with national security and you can only block websites or apps in the scenario of national security. But when you look at the press release by Ministry of Electronics and Technology, it says, because we have to protect data security and safeguarding the privacy of 130 crore Indians, and it has been noted that some of these apps have been storing data outside India. And at the same time, they say that there were representations outside the parliament and inside the parliament from bipartisan support to ban these apps. And they have received several communications from individuals and departments like CERT, the MHA, and the India's Cyber Crime Coordination Center. But this whole argument of privacy seems weird, right? Like, you're bringing both national security and privacy together. But the same claims also exist for, say, WhatsApp, at which also the government of India is odds with. But you see, the government has banned only Chinese apps and not necessarily, say, WhatsApp or other American apps or European.
Actually, if you look at Section 69A, it talks about few specific categories. And if you may permit me, I'll just read them out quickly. It says that you know, various kinds of things may be done if it's necessary or expedient to do so in the interest of sovereignty and integrity of India, defense of India, security of the state, friendly relations with foreign states or public order, or for preventing incitement to the commission of any cognizable offense relating to the above. In short, just to provide a bit of context, some parts of these are actually taken from the Indian Constitution, where in Article 19.2, some of these phrases are actually used as areas or issues for which the government may impose reasonable restrictions. And so some of these are from the Constitution of India, but there are some additions as well, such as the preventing incitement to commission of any cognizable offense and so on, which aren't actually there in the Constitution, and defense of India also isn't there in the Constitution. But so when you look at this, it's clear that data privacy or data protection or data security, you know, in the sense of data protection, isn't actually part of this list. And we know that according to the press release, these apps, a list of 59 apps, have been blocked on the basis of the authority provided under Section 69A. So it's clear to me that the reasoning provided by the government is a bit muddled. Now, the press release does also talk about sovereignty, but it doesn't actually explain how sovereignty of India, okay, is actually impacted by, say, teenagers making videos on TikTok, or accessing videos on TikTok, or using something like UC browser. How is India's sovereignty, which is a word that invokes, say, India's sovereignty may be impacted if there's a war and Indian land is taken over and so on by a foreign aggressor. But how is sovereignty, which is such a big important issue, how is that impacted by these apps? The linkage, what is in legal terms called the proximate cause, it's not at all clear why, you know, they would be blocking these apps and how these apps impact sovereignty.
Sovereignty and national security are these terms that which the government of India has used everywhere. It's not necessarily, say, related to data and technology, but you would see it in land, and you'd find it everywhere, and national security becomes imminent threat. And we've seen that during the right to privacy hearings and the judgment, some of the judges have recommended, or rather I would say ordered, that the term be brought under a legislative framework, especially in the context of surveillance, which is usually done under national security. Do you think there is a future scenario where, say, some TikToker goes to the court asking that his work, for example, someone who's actually earning money by making TikTok videos, his work, his right to work has been impacted, and he could petition the court to undo the ban? And do you think that the government will be forced to explain how sovereignty of India is being actually impacted?
So I don't think it even needs to be someone who is making their living off something like TikTok, because the freedom of speech and expression provided under the Constitution also includes the right to access information not just the right to speak and the right to express oneself. It includes the right to access information as well. Now, clearly, there is a case to be made that this order actually inhibits such a right. And so this order clearly impacts Article 19(1)(a) rights, which is under the Constitution, Article 19(1)(a) guarantees that all citizens have a right to freedom of speech and expression. And so that gets impacted by this. And let us remember that it's not just TikTok. Okay, there are a wide variety of apps which have been blocked, including apps which are linked to e-commerce, like Club Factory, apps which provide, you know, just mail clients, like QQ Mail, apps which are linked to, you know, just your computer, your phone, such as like a battery saver app, and so on. So it's a wide variety of things which have been blocked, and at least some of them. Now there are two cases to be made about freedom of speech here. One is the case that many people make, which is that code is speech, because code is written in a way that human beings can understand. Okay, so programming languages are something that human beings understand, and when you write something in that form, that itself constitutes speech and hence should be protected as speech. Now, even if you don't agree with this argument, it must be clear that at least when it comes to something like TikTok, or at least when it comes to something like you know, browsers, you are in a situation where these apps either allow you access to information or act as platforms for you to express yourself. And both of those are definitely guarded under the Constitution. And so constitutional rights definitely are impacted. And under the Constitution, national security per se isn't a phrase that's used. Sovereignty and integrity of India is a phrase that's used. Security of the state is used. Even public order, which is lesser than those two, is also used. But yeah, national security itself isn't a phrase that's used, and so that's a. But the press release does use that term. It talks about data mining by and profiling by elements hostile to national security and defense of India, and how this kind of data mining isn't being done by others isn't clear. Nor is it clear how data mining and profiling of this kind actually. Is actually a threat to sovereignty. If the government of India is somehow does have legitimate fears about official secrets from India ending up in Chinese hands through some of these apps. Now, how ES File Explorer, you know, provides access to Chinese government, I'm not really sure. But even let's say it somehow all these apps are somehow tainted and can provide the Chinese government access to official secrets. Why should the ban operate at a nationwide level? Why not just prohibit those who are handling official secrets, such as those in defense establishment or those who are government servants and their and those who are in contact with them, and prohibit those people from using whichever apps the government thinks are suspect? But why should this kind of fear prevent everyone in India from accessing these apps? It's not clear to me.
I mean, it's the process of banning was always secretive, and I don't think there was ever an appeal process, because in the past, you would have seen there were a lot of ban, including, say, pornographic content. We had the Pornhub ban, and they just evaded it by launching an alternative site. But there were also, say, legitimate websites like archive.org, which have been banned, and they always wonder, or even WeTransfer ban, which recently happened, one makes it wonder what is a legitimate process to appeal this, right? Like, I see Clash of Clans or Clash of Kings, a game part of the list of apps which are banned. I mean, how can a game app be dangerous? Sure, it could be collecting a lot of data, but I don't think there are any instructions for these companies to adhere to Indian standards, except there is the IT Act, and I believe they are already following most of the requirements under it. So do you think the 69A, the rule, is actually being implemented in the wrong way? Or do you think the law itself is bad in that sense?
It's a bit early to say, given that news of this ban only came out yesterday, and we don't even know under which provision of the 69A rules this action has been taken. For instance, under those rules, there is a provision for blocking in case of emergency as well. Okay, which of course has to be ratified at a later point. But that also exists, and then that allows for 48 hours of leeway for the government and so on. So we don't really know, and we're recording it the day after the government put out a press release about this. So I wouldn't want to speculate too much. But one thing that is clear is that there is no appeals mechanism. There is a mechanism for hearing, for being heard before the ban. Under Section 69A. However, there is no appeals mechanism. And this is way back in 2009, when I used to be with the Center for Internet and Society, we put out analysis pointing this out when it was still in draft stage at that point. We pointed out that this is a problem, that these rules are really badly drafted. They don't safeguard rights of those whose, websites or web services and so on are being blocked under these orders. And they don't provide any kinds of time limitation for how long a block order shall be in place. They don't provide for appeals mechanism. There are all kinds of infirmities. And the rules also talk about confidentiality. Now, that also is a bit of a problem, because you can't have confidential orders when it comes to, say, banning of books. On the other hand, banning of websites seem to operate by a different regime, and which isn't as conducive to transparency.
We never had a list of websites that are blocked by Government of India. You just know that a website is blocked when you visit it. It just says that due to Department of Telecom's directions, this website has been blocked. I mean, people often evade it by using a VPN, but there is no way someone would know if their website was blocked and why it was blocked. Did the Government of India ever give a reply to anyone, say, under RTI?
Yes, actually. So it's funny you should ask that, because in 2011, I did file an RTI with what was at that time the Department of Information Technology, which has now become the Ministry of Electronics and IT. But, you know, they did reply to me. They did tell me, give me a list of 11 websites that were blocked by them. And they told me that, if I remember correctly, that they had received 20 requests, one had been rejected, 11 had been accepted, and the rest were pending further information from the requesters, or something of that kind. Those were roughly that was roughly the breakup of the block lists. Now, this was in 2011. I must note that after this, whenever else I sent RTI requests on, asking for this information, they never actually responded. They usually cited Rule 16 of the 69A rules, which talks about confidentiality, and rejected my RTI request. Now, that was also at issue in the Shreya Singhal case, which was a case in the Supreme Court, And the Supreme Court essentially held that that the government has to make information available as well. But this is, and apart from that, we have had cases where through whistleblowers, people including me, have gotten access to block lists and have published these block lists. I have done so in the past, and that has been made, including, for instance, the block list of all the sites blocked for pornography on the basis of them being pornography. And so these have been discussed in public, but this is the first time that I'm aware of that the government is proactively publishing a list of apps which it has blocked, and not doing so in terms of a response to an RTI or cases where this kind of information has been leaked to people.
I think the Internet Freedom Foundation got a leak of around 4,000 documents by some insider with all the blocking lists over a period of time, and they have published it. I guess this is the most active archive right now on how these blocking mechanisms happen. And I think they just did publish it this week. People really need to analyze and see if there are patterns. I think that will emerge.
One thing I can say is when I was going through these kinds of lists in the past, two broad patterns emerge. One is that a large number of these blocks are actually court approved, that the majority actually come from courts and not from bureaucrats. Okay. The second is that the majority of what I had seen were actually on the basis of copyright. And these were, again, cases where a copyright holder or an entity acting on behalf of the copyright holder got certain websites and URLs banned without having shown, in most cases that I had seen, without having shown that there actually was copyrighted content. So at one point in time, Google Docs was blocked in India because that was included in a long list of websites that a copyright holder provided to a court in Calcutta. And the High Court happily, added it to the block list. And so that's amongst the things that used to prevail, at least up until 2018. I would love to, go through this list made available by the IFF and see what kinds of patterns emerge.
I mean, speaking of the implementation of banning, I know courts have been ordering this in the past, and mostly in terms of the movie producers who go to courts proactively before the release of the movie to get some of these sites blocked. But how is it technically implemented? It's often the people mitigated by bringing up different domain names. You see that often happen with movies. And say, what if some of these Chinese firms decide to further operate even with the ban enforced by government of India? I don't think you can technically implement it. Can you?
It's difficult, let me say, to strictly enforce this kind of a ban. Okay, because it's not difficult for there to be a ban. Most people won't be using, say, something like a VPN. And most people stick to their ISP-provided DNS server, but it isn't uniform. So there are multiple ways in which bans like this can happen. So one, which is a common method, is using DNS poisoning. So what happens is you are essentially asking your ISP for... you want to visit a particular website, say TikTok.com. You ask the ISP, what is the web address for TikTok.com, which will be something like 139.28.5.10 or some IP address like that. And your ISP essentially lies to you and doesn't give you the accurate address to be able to access this website. Now, that's a common thing. Another thing that is common is actually listening to the web address that you're actually requesting. So not at the DNS level, but at one level below that, looking at the web address and seeing if that is blocked. Now, another thing that can be done is blocking of specific IP addresses, which is also something that takes place sometimes. Otherwise, and this is, you know, the most difficult kind of block to evade, things that go use something called DPI, deep packet inspection, and try to figure out what precise server you're accessing and what precise resource within that server you're trying to access. Now, various kinds of means exist to evade these kinds of blocks. Now, much of the internet content nowadays is HTTPS. That will evade some of the blocks. If you change your DNS provider from your ISP to something else and make sure that that something else actually uses DNS over TLS or DNS over HTTPS, so essentially secure DNS, then that's another way of evading some of these blocks. Using a VPN or other kinds of anonymizing networks, such as I2P or Tor, would also evade these blocks, and those will almost certainly be effective at evading these kinds of blocks. Some of these blocks are actually put in place not by ISPs, but put in place by large platforms such as Google or Apple. And in some cases, like TikTok, from what I understand, they have voluntarily removed themselves from the app stores while they're discussing this through with the government. But that wouldn't be the majority of these. But if it is blocked by one of these app stores, then there are various ways of getting around that. So those app stores might block it on the basis of where you have registered your account from. So if you say, I'm from India, when you signed up for a Google account or an Apple ID, then they might be doing what's called geo-restriction. So they might not be showing you specific app since you indicated you're from India. And so you might need to change that, or you might need to create a new account or something of that kind. And essentially, in short, trying to strictly enforce this is almost impossible. And so it seems to me that given that the government has proactively published this, it's not just meant to be taken at face value in terms of why they needed to block all of these, but also meant to be a kind of signal to our neighbor China that they are willing to block these kinds of services.
I think it's a message more to appease Indians locally than to actually affect China in any way, because I don't see how we could put an economic dent into these apps, considering most of them are global. And I don't see how much revenue that these apps are even providing from India to these companies. But the claims of digital sovereignty have increased in India for the past decade. I mean, this was primarily started by some of the Indian businesses who thought they could make similar applications. But unfortunately, they were unable to compete with some of the American and the Chinese big tech who were dumping in a lot of money in India. And often digital colonialism is an argument that's made against these American and Chinese big tech. But when it comes to specifically with Chinese firms, you see the point of national security argument being brought in. But you don't see that, say, with most of the American firms, like especially with Google, you never make it. While I understand you also make that with WhatsApp on Facebook because of their past instance like Cambridge Analytica. So at some level, there is a duality in terms of how law applies to some of these entities that operate in India.
You know, you touched upon something that I was thinking about when I read the press release put out by MEIT, which actually talks about complaints from various sources. Now, I was wondering, why don't they talk about who have made these complaints? For instance, competitors to these apps in India might have made these complaints. Have they investigated these complaints? And what have they found on the basis of these investigations if they have done so? So it's they don't actually note that, you know, that there has been a discovery process. They don't say who has made these complaints and so on. They at one point talk about there being bipartisan concerns, okay, but that doesn't really tell us much, you know. And so just wanted to point that out. The second thing is, it's funny you should mention Cambridge Analytica, because we were promised by the minister at that time when the scandal arose, and there was a promise made in Parliament as well, that this would be investigated. Now, it's been multiple years since the information about Cambridge Analytica came out, and allegations that Cambridge Analytica's services were used by Indian parties since those allegations arose. Yet there has been no investigation. We were told that Mark Zuckerberg would be called to India and would have to depose, and nothing of that kind happened. And so, yes, there are various kinds of double standards that we see, but we also see limitations in what the government actually can do as well. And digital colonialism, let me just throw in a footnote there, that for me, by and large, that's a very flimsy argument in most cases. And it's just meant to evoke this idea of colonialism in a way, but there is very little meat, there's very little substance behind these kinds of claims and theoretical apparatus, I would say.
I mean, I have like Dhirubhai Ambani asking Indians to do a satyagraha to claim back their data. But at the same time, Jio's aspirations to become the Indian big tech are a direct conflict of interest, right? It's like a fight against the foreigners, but you can give your data to me is what is the message that's being spread. But the actual problem at some level, when you go back to the whole idea of sovereignty in cyberspace, is bringing this claims of borders in cyberspace is really interesting, because you're trying to take off an actual ongoing standoff with borders at the Galvan Valley, and you're bringing it into cyberspace. And we all know China's capability in terms of cyber nation state attacks is far more superior than India, and because we don't have a cyber warfare scenario. I don't think even we have a new cyber policy in place. I think we're going to try to write one now, but I see the escalations that are happening here could be actually devastating if China actually goes down that path of cyber warfare. Do you see such a scenario wherein Indian government is actually capable of defending in itself?
I'd say India has zero capabilities. I mean, we do know of multiple instances, say, of malware, targeted malware originating in India, targeted at Pakistan, targeted at China, and so on. Those have been documented by cybersecurity companies. But what I do know is for every one time that I've seen something of this kind, I have seen far more instances of India being at the receiving end. So there was the Suckfly APT, there was Calypso, there was Keyboy. There have been multiple, you know, funnily named attacks against India, and where India has been targeted. And sometimes even defense establishments have been compromised. To what extent, we actually don't know, but we do know through public reports that they have been compromised. There has been no parliamentary investigation into this. There has been no, at least public-facing governmental investigation into any of these. So we have absolutely no idea about these, other than the little that gets reported by cybersecurity companies and in the press.
At some level, most of this is a sunlight problem, the way I see it, in terms of governance not really happening the right way and mixing up these issues, because there are a lot of these terms that even I talked about, right? Like, it's just happening because we don't know what the real intentions are behind it. On that note, Pranesh, if you want to add anything else.
I just would like to end by pointing out that we in India, we are a democracy. We are guided by rule of law. And so while it might seem strange that I'd be harping on about, is this in compliance with this particular section or not, when India has come to, near the brink of war with China and so on. But I think it is important that that India respects the rule of law and does not become, does not follow the Chinese example, does not create an extensive firewall kind of situation, and actually does not follow in the footsteps of massive censorship. However, I am quite sad to note that at least when it comes to web censorship, we seem to have gone down quite a long way, and I'm not sure how to feel about this, because it's very undemocratic to be censoring websites, web services, apps in this kind of an untransparent manner, as India has traditionally done, and even in this case to do so without actual sound legal reasoning and just on the basis of a claim, without releasing the legal order on the basis of which these have been blocked, without releasing any kind of analysis to show why these actually pose a threat, rather than just having to trust the government on its word and so on. So if we take it seriously that we are a democracy and follow the rule of law, then the government should really be acting very differently and should really be much more transparent and following the law to the letter.
Thank you for listening to the episode of Cyber Democracy. You can listen to this podcast on sonoindia.in or any other podcast app of your choice. As independent producers, we rely on you, our listeners, to support us. So please visit the support page on our website, sonoindia.in, and contribute generously.